Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin. Featuring out and about, thought-provoking conversations on the street. We consider topics with local relevance and global significance. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative and try to explore whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the Arts Hour, I feature in-depth interviews with local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And in this, the Topic Hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects. And the show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways that we engage with the world. If you want to find out more information about the show, you can go to our website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. There's podcasts there of all previous shows, and you can also connect with me on social media if you would like to. So again, the show website is itsaquestionofbalance.com. And as I mentioned, It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and a guest hour. And we have two tabs on the homepage of the website, guests and topics. And if you click on either of those, it brings up a whole page with photos and either the names of all the previous guests or the topics that we've covered. So it makes it very easy to select a podcast of interest. So I hope you might go and have a look at the website and see if there's something that piques your fancy there. So that, again, it's a question of balance.com. But right now, we're featuring Out and About, as I said, and the idea of this is just to get us thinking about questions that affect us all, to stimulate new thinking or clarify what we already feel. And what I do is I just go out on the street and talk to the people who are willing to talk to me, and always very grateful to those people who are willing to stop apropos of nothing and give their thoughts on often quite deep subjects. So this week we're considering how much is enough. And this sort of came to me because there's a lot of talk about how much people have and how some people have a lot more than other people. And it just started me thinking, how much is enough? You know, we all have that sort of dream, or most of us have that dream of like, if I won the lottery, I would do this, that and the other. But, you know, in reality, most of us are not going to win the lottery. So what is enough, you know, materially and in other ways? What is enough? How much is enough? So that's what I'm looking at this week. And the first people that I spoke to were John and Katie. So let's hear their thoughts. Hello, my name's Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
John.
And Katie.
Well, thanks, John and Katie, for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're looking at how much is enough. I'm wondering what represents quality of life for you? What would constitute the Aristotelian idea of the good life?
Having all of your basic needs met and being able to be outdoors. And what would you add to that? Being free from want.
Right, okay. Would you have aspirations, you know, for enough money to retire without having to work, for your children to be able to go to college, those sort of things? Do you think like that or not necessarily?
I do think like that, but I think there's a balance. I think you can have too little money and you can have too much money. And I think the way to happiness is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. We live in San Francisco where we see people have too much money all the time. So, and just, and how detrimental that can be to their life.
Yeah. We also see people with too little money.
Yeah. I work with people that have too little money. So yeah, there's just, it needs to be a balance. And I think in terms of saving for college, you know, our plan is actually just to save a lump sum of money for our children. And if they want to go to college, they can use it to go to college. Or if they want to use it to travel, they can use it to travel.
Travel around the
they
world.
Can't use it to else, they can't yeah. use it to party, but yeah. They can use it to do something else. Because you know, the way that education is in our country is, I mean, education, are the institutions that we have are materialistic. It's all based on, you know, obtaining these things that we think that we have to have in order to be who we want to be. And really, you can just go be who you are.
Right, yeah. And capitalism rests on an endless expansion of wants. And so, you know, things like greed and usury, which used to be thought of as sins, kind of were set aside really with the idea of capitalism, with the end of getting everybody out of poverty. And it has increased a lot of, provided a lot of wealth. But do you feel that acquiring material goods for a lot of people has become an end in itself rather than a means to happiness?
I think that's probably true. I think we see a lot of acquiring material goods for the individual and not for the community. And people don't look at the wealth of their community. Sorry, baby's trying to grab the microphone. I think that is that's detrimental to society at large when everyone tries to get ahead themselves and tries to have enough for themselves or their nuclear family, but doesn't look at their community.
So maybe our pursuit of the good life has become very individualistic rather than thinking so much about those around us, would you say?
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely individualized.
And how much do you think, or how much do you feel influenced by the beliefs and behaviors of those around you about, you know, in terms of how much wealth you should have? You say you live in San Francisco, there's a lot of, you know, very wealthy people there. Do you ever feel like you have to keep up with the Joneses in any way?
Oh, no, I think have turned it off just because we can't keep up with the, that we live on different financial planets than a lot of those people. And, you know, I think that we try to be a really community-minded family and make sure that, you know, our basic needs are met and that we're outdoors a lot.
Yes, yeah.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin, and our topic discussion this week. And there we had a very young contributor to this week's discussion. And it was interesting. Apparently, there is quite a peer pressure with babies to buy a lot of stuff for them, you know, what you need. It's a bit like the wedding industry as well. So perhaps that's what the baby was trying to comment on there at the end. Anyway, the next person that I spoke to was Max. So let's hear what he had to say.
Hi, my name's Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
My name's Max.
Well, thanks for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're thinking about how much is enough. The term the good life is associated with Aristotle's teachings on ethics and refers to the life we'd like to live or happiness. And Aristotle believed that virtue was inextricably linked with the good life, as well as health, wealth, and beauty. So I'm wondering what represents quality of life for you? What would constitute the good life for you? You're quite young, aren't you? So looking forward, what would be a good life for you?
I mean, the good life is all subjective to where you are in the world and where you are in society. Just like if you have nothing, then the good life could just be having a consistent meal.
Right, yeah.
And having a roof over your head. For me, it would probably be having a steady job and being able to supply myself with food and, you know, electricity and stuff like that.
So do you have aspirations beyond that for a good life that would enable you to thrive as well as just survive?
Well, a satisfying job that I enjoy would be a good first step to that.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Economics journalist Ryan Avent comments in 1843 magazine that the economist John Maynard Keynes mused in 1930 that a century hence, society might be so rich that work hours would be cut to 10 to 15 hours a week. Keynes postulated, for the first time since his creation, man will be faced with his real, his permanent problem, how to use his freedom from pressing economic cares, how to occupy the leisure which science and compound interest will have won for him, to live wisely and agreeably and well. Marx had a different view. He believed that being occupied by good work was living well. However, capitalism requires an endless expansion of wants. So although it's generated great wealth, as far as acquiring the good life goes, it seems that the means has become the end. And I'm just wondering how true this rings for you. Do you feel that acquiring material goods has become an end in itself, particularly, let's say, in America?
I mean, well, when you have a steady job. I mean, if you enjoy it, then that is good life for you. But if you are living in a steady situation but not having to work, you work like two times a week, one time a week, that gets really stale, really pretty fast. I've experienced that myself. And a lot of times you want social interaction between people in a workplace environment.
So you might agree with Marx more that good work is living well in a way. If you're, if you have work that you enjoy and gets you into social interaction with people, then that is part of a good life.
If you enjoy your work, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah, that's very true. But what about this idea of material ends having become an end in itself? I'm just wondering how much you think our society is a conspicuous one of consumption, whether there is this sort of pressure to acquire material goods, to have a better car, to have the best house. Do you feel subject to any of that yourself? Do you see it around you at all?
I personally don't, and I don't from some of the people I associate with, but I generally agree with that on like an America sort of widespread.
Right.
A lot of people think that's really important to life, to always getting more and more. And it's just kind of the greed that is kind of in the norm nowadays. It's kind of depressing.
Yeah, well, some of what I've talked about with other people is that capitalism has sort of normalized greed, because in order for capitalism to work, people have to keep buying more and more and more. Unfortunately, that's the way the model works. And so in a way, greed has become good, because, you know, we're asked to buy more so that we stimulate the economy. So perhaps in some way, which there's no easy answer, we need to look at that and find perhaps a different way of being.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. And then finally, how much influence do you think the beliefs and behaviours of those around us have on our feelings about wealth and how much we want to acquire?
Very much so. Yeah. They apply to you. If you're around people that constantly are saying and just having the airs to them, like they need more constantly, you kind of, unless you're really steadfast in your character, even small parts will affect you.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Just. Yeah, and if someone's just got the latest this, that, or the other, and you see it, you might have been perfectly happy if you hadn't seen it, but once you've seen it, then maybe you want it.
I mean, I guess envy can be part of the American greed dream, but a lot of times it's like innate in the certain people that are going to be those ones that always want more.
I see.
And
so you almost don't think about it, you're just doing it.
Yes. Mm. I've had the same phone for 3 years, and people are like, oh, I got this crazy new smartphone. It's like lasts a week without charging it.
Yeah.
That would be really nice. And, you know, eventually I would want something like that. But I'm not super pressed on it unless my phone breaks or something.
Yeah. So it's somewhat important to have people with values around you that perhaps aren't based all on a materialist outlook.
Oh, yes. It's really important to have, like, quality people around you. Otherwise, the bad people kind of bring you down to their level. And you always want to aspire to have, like, a personal character that is higher than those stereotypes that people want to avoid.
Right. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts. I appreciate it.
No problem.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversations after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com. It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com. Santa Cruz artist Doreen Davis states, "I become one with the essence of nature. This process puts me in touch with the soul of all living things." Owners of Doreen's beautiful paintings can vouch for this truth. Gazing at a painting by Doreen Davis simultaneously enlivens and soothes the soul. Working predominantly in watercolor, but also in acrylic and oil, Doreen's floral and landscape paintings have appeared in many exhibitions and are in private collections throughout the United States, in England, and in Germany. Her paintings are on display online at DoreenDavis.com and experience the visual delight of being at one with nature through her paintings.
I'm Casey, and I'm the second-generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years.
Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And we heard from Bookshop Santa Cruz in the break there. And I just wanted to let local listeners know about what's coming up this week at Bookshop Santa Cruz. On April the 18th at 7 p.m, one of the world's most beloved writing teachers, a mentor who has inspired millions to take up the pen and write, Natalie Goldberg, will be discussing her new book, The Great Spring. So if you're interested in writing, that might be a good one to go to. That's April the 18th at 7 p.m. And then on April the 20th at 7 p.m, you can join Bookshop Santa Cruz to celebrate Laurie R. King's perhaps most anticipated mystery yet, The Murder of Mary Russell, with a reading and signing plus special launch festivities and surprises. Sherlock Holmes is back in the latest of this New York Times best-selling series, but where is Mary? And Laurie R. King is a previous guest on the show, so you can check out my interview with her at itsaquestionofbalance.com. On the homepage, if you go to the guest tab, if you scroll down, you'll see Laurie R. King's photograph. If you click on that or her name, you will be able to go to that podcast and hear my interview with her. And then if you're local, you'll be able to go along and meet her in person on the 20th. And you can find out more information about all of that at bookshopsantacruz.com. Well, It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and a guest hour. Right now, we're featuring Out and About, our topic hour. If you have any thoughts about the topic discussion this week, do email me, Ruth at itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'm always interested to hear your thoughts. So that's Ruth at itsaquestionofbalance.com. Well, next, let's hear my conversation with Clark. Hi, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
Clark.
Well, thanks so much, Clark, for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're looking at how much is enough. The term the good life is associated with Aristotle's teachings on ethics and refers to the life we would like to live, or happiness. And Aristotle believed that virtue was inextricably linked with the good life, as well as health, wealth, and beauty. Whereas the Stoics thought that virtue was the end of everything and that material goods were unimportant to happiness. An article on zenhabits.net comments, what does enough mean? Enough doesn't mean just the bare necessities of life. That's not really enough.
Enough means having enough to live, enough to be happy, and enough to thrive. So I'm just wondering what represents quality of life for you? What constitutes the good life?
Food, clothing, and shelter and health. I would consider those to be the optimal benefits. Toys and gadgets don't really make life meaningful.
Right.
They're toys.
Yeah.
Contentment is my biggest thing.
Okay.
That's the biggest thing that adds quality of life to me.
And how do you find contentment? Is that requisite to some degree on a certain level of wealth?
I think finding contentment is like finding happiness. You don't find it. It's a byproduct of looking at life a particular way.
Okay, so maybe you would agree with Aristotle to some degree that the ethical life is a large part of what leads us to having or feeling that we have a good life. Would you say? For because you're looking at those aspects of life?
Yes. How you live determines, you know, what your life is like, I think, yeah.
Right.
You cannot control what happens to you, but you have the choice of how you respond to life.
Right.
Depends on what you want.
So would you say that for you that certain spiritual needs would need to be met also for you to feel like you have enough?
For myself, yes. I can't speak for all people. Some people, they don't have any need at all like that. But there is some sort of a psychological, emotional, maybe spiritual need that I see in a lot of people.
Yes, yeah. In their book, How Much is Enough? Money and the Good Life, the Skidelskys make a call for moral economics, asking what constitutes the good life. And they begin with the early 20th century economist John Maynard Keynes. And Diziette from the Netherlands comments, John Maynard Keynes believed that there would come a time when capitalism would be able to provide for all our needs. When that time was reached, there would be no further reason for growth. Capitalism was a necessary but temporary evil, a transitional stage, a means to an end, and the end being the good life. Unfortunately, as we've seen, this end has actually been the triumph of an aggressive and consumerist capitalism that has swept all before it, capturing us in a seemingly endless spiral, not of needs, but wants. We are caught in a insatiability trap, and the good life appears to be receding into dreams and sitcoms. So that's the opinion of the Skidelskys, who are academic economists. So I'm wondering how true that rings for you. Do you feel acquiring material goods has become an end in itself for some people?
I see it as an end in itself, that many people have done that. I have a favorite quote from the book Jurassic Park.
Uh-huh.
Malcolm the mathematician, he says, we've advanced so greatly. 20,000 years ago, you know, cavemen just worked 20 hours a week, then just relaxed. We've progressed so far.
Yes.
And yeah. I have no television at home. I have no internet at home.
Right.
I work in Silicon Valley, but when I get home, I unplug, and it's amazing how much I don't know about what's going wrong with the world and how content I can be in that ignorance.
Yes, yeah. Well, you know, Keynes was extrapolating the situation. He was writing in the 30s, and what he saw was that if things continued as they were, that he thought that people would only be working 10 or 15 hours a week, and it would be, what on earth do we do with our leisure time? Instead of that, what seems to have happened is that some people are working a lot more, and then other people don't have any work at all. So it kind of didn't go the way that he had hoped. But to what degree do you equate happiness with money?
As my grandmother used to say, if I have to be miserable, I might as well be rich and miserable rather than poor and miserable. So money doesn't necessarily hurt. But if it becomes the end, then it can do more harm than good. It can, because it could distract you from the real things.
Right. I mean, do you think that we've got into a sort of conspicuous consumerism where, you know, we're encouraged to buy in order to stimulate the economy and things like that? I mean, do you think that it's hard for us to feel enough is enough sort of thing because there's so much pressure from around us with advertising to not reach a point where we feel, well, this is okay, I feel okay with what I have?
Yes, that urban legend of Rockefeller, how much does it take to make you happy? Just a little bit more.
Right, yes.
And, and I was an economics major in college,
okay.
And our entire economic model is built on consuming more today than yesterday.
Yeah.
And eventually that has to collapse.
Yes.
But what happens after that, it doesn't sound like it'll be pretty.
No, and I mean, I think part of it is accepting less to some degree, isn't it? I mean, more of us have to accept less. I mean, I don't think there should be a forcible redistribution of wealth, and I believe in a free market, but it seems like if we're all trying to become very wealthy, that just can't work out well for everybody. So do you think that part of the good life for you is taking into consideration people around you, that the larger community is as well?
Yes, where I live, we happen to be a very close community, and we watch out for each other as people, and I find that to be much more meaningful than having a new RV or a new Beamer or something like that.
Right.
The people make the life more interesting to me.
Yes, yeah. In an article for the New York Times, Ron Lieber ponders on how difficult it is for parents to make decisions about how much to give their children, and he suggests possibly doing a materialism audit before you move into an area to get an idea of what the prevailing attitudes are about money. So I'm wondering, how much of an influence do you think the beliefs or behaviors of those around us have on our feelings about wealth and how much we want to acquire it?
I think we are constantly influenced by the environment we choose to be around. Choose your friends because they will help form you, and I think that's a critical part of it. I see parents that have bought a lot of things for their children, and they deny their children the ability to work things out on their own and get that sense of achievement of actually getting something on their own.
Yes. Yeah. What motivates you to achieve?
Well, really, fear and anxiety.
Okay. To provide for yourself in the world?
To provide for myself and to feel a sense of significance and validation.
Right. And is that sense of significance and validation tied to money at all? I mean, in America, it's quite hard for it not to be, because there's so much about your self-perception is tied to accruing money in America, isn't it? Is that I mean, I come from outside. I'm an American citizen now, but is that something you experienced too, having lived here all your life?
Yes, very tied to money. It's taken me a lot of work to consciously disconnect that.
Right. Yes. Do you ever find yourself trying to keep up with your peers? Keep up with the Joneses in any way, whether it be financial or in other ways?
Not directly. Possibly indirectly or subliminally, but not directly. I gave that up a long time ago. There's a rule in economics. There's an opportunity cost, and so everything else the Joneses get, there's a cost involved with it. And so I look at it, am I willing to pay that cost to get that benefit?
Right, yes. And you were talking about the economic model that we have is based on continual expansion, and to the extent that, you know, we're in recession if we're not expanding the economy, even if it stands still, we're in recession, you know. So do you see any way forward where we can change that, or are we just so wedded to the new, younger people supporting the old people, there's just no way around it?
I don't see any solution. Unfortunately, capitalism, I think, is the best fit for human nature as it stands now, and I don't see human nature changing significantly in another 10, 20,000 years.
Right. Do you think, though, that if what we felt was enough was less, then capitalism could still work as a model? Because it would help us to get to that point, maybe, of having a nice house, nice car, you know, enough money to retire, and we can send our kids to college and, you know, buy a few nice things. If we were all happy with that and capitalism helped us achieve it, do you think then it could work as a model if people weren't sort of going out for making millions and billions?
Yes, if we could develop some tweak to the economic model to allow sustainability. When you have a zero growth rate, how does capitalism work? If somebody can figure out that detail, then that's the first step. However, you think of Star Trek, our wonderful Star Trek world. They had everything. And so what's the plot? Conflict, you know, seeking out new things. It's built in our DNA, too. We are very rarely satisfied with what we have. We always want something more.
But maybe if what we were seeking for was new frontiers and new philosophies, and it was more about seeking with our mind and our spirit, then it would have less impact on other people than accruing wealth does.
Also maybe less impact on our environment and the planet.
Yes,
There's that old Earth first thing. Earth first, we'll log the other planets later. So have to be careful about that.
Yes, yeah. So would you be willing to have less so you could work less, and possibly then there would be more wealth and work to go around? Because that's also one theory. I don't know how we would make this happen, you know, without imposing it in an artificial way, you know, but does that come into your thought pattern at all? Well, you know, if I could be satisfied with this and then I'd be working less, I'd have more leisure time, and there's then more work to be picked up, you know, by other people for them then to have enough.
That's a good theory. I live in a very small 850 square foot house, so I have less there, and I have given up that because every asset you have is also a corresponding liability.
Yes.
The concern I have is that if people are not working too much, then our economy recedes. So
yes,
we're stuck
yeah.
in this vicious circle.
Yeah.
But yes, in fact, my concern is time is the one irreplaceable element in our life that we
yes.
cannot replace.
Yeah.
Money, everything else can be replaced.
Yes.
Time is the one fixed quantity.
Yeah.
And so that is, I want to preserve that and use that as well as possible.
Yes. Marx didn't get a lot right about the way the world is now, but one thing he did believe that was work provided a meaning to life, that work was a meaningful life. And it seems like for people who are in better jobs, that has become more true than ever. I mean, people are just working all the time, the people who are fortunate to have those jobs that they enjoy. Is that something that you see?
I think the thing that drives us is the drive to contribute, not necessarily through work, but to be able to be considered okay. as a contribution to the
yeah.
society around us.
Yeah.
Work is one element of that. My other concern is work is also a way to escape the responsibilities to other people.
Yes, yeah, no, that's very true. And also, do you think that our pursuit of the good life that Aristotle talks about has become more individualistic rather than thinking about, you know, our community around us?
Definitely. Our yeah. entire model is built on individualism.
Mm.
Other countries, other cultures, it's the corporate model. What do we do? What do we think?
Yes.
Here, it's all about me.
Yeah. I know I was hearing something, I can't remember which African country, but they were talking about their language doesn't really have the word I in it very much. You can use it, but they talk we all the time. And it's so alien to us. I mean, we don't even realize that there's still cultures that think like that, do we?
Correct. I think in terms of theology, religion, the Western world has taken with, like Christianity and Judaism, and they've turned those from corporate mentalities to individual mentalities.
Mm-hmm.
Philosophy, we turn to personal existentialism.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we've put the individual at the center, and it's a conflict because we are social beings.
Mm.
And so our interconnectedness is a critical part of our welfare.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for your comments. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been fun.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and an arts guest hour. Right now, we're featuring Out and About, thought-provoking conversations on the street. And if you have any thoughts about this topic discussion, do email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'm always really interested to hear your thoughts. So that's ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. And remember also at the website, you can find podcasts of all previous shows, all the different interesting topics we've had. And we've had some wonderful arts guests as well. So you can pick and choose what and when you want to listen to those. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back after these messages.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays.
Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Danielle, and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Before the break, it's a question of balance has a topic hour and an arts hour. And right now we're featuring Out and About, thought-provoking, at least hopefully thought-provoking, conversations on the street. And this week our topic is how much is enough? Obviously for some of us that's a very important question in terms of just making ends meet. For others of us, it's a question about how much material stuff do we need in our lives to make us happy, and what else in our lives constitutes the good life beyond material things? Well, the last conversation I had today was with Stuart, so let's hear what he had to say. Hello, my name's Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
My name's Stuart.
Well, thanks, Stuart, for stopping for the Out and About feature. And this week, we're looking at how much is enough. In ancient ethics, there was a lot of discussion about the link between virtue of character and happiness. And Aristotle believed that to live the good life or to flourish as a human, that predominantly we had to have and exhibit virtue, although he also thought health, wealth, and beauty factored into human flourishing. The Stoics thought, however, that virtue was sufficient and denied the need at all for external goods in order to be happy. So I'm wondering, what represents quality of life for you? What constitutes the good life?
For me, the good life is doing good things for other people, friends, family, time in nature, and time to do the fun stuff, like, you know, adventures, walking around in the forest, picnicking. But I won't lie, and money is very addictive. In our culture, we think money is happiness. And even though I tell myself, and I have friends who tell me, and I read things that tell me that money isn't happiness, I still, at least some percent of the time, think that the more money I have, the happier I will be.
Well, certainly money solves money problems, doesn't it? So, I mean, if you don't have enough money to pay your rent or, you know, whatever, then you're not going to be happy. So I think to some degree, obviously, and the things you were talking about, having the time to go out and spend in nature, money facilitates that to some degree. But how much is enough for you in terms of what do you need in your life to feel I've got enough now? You know, do you want enough money to retire so you don't have to work? You know, to, I don't know. But
well, that's a good question. And what I've noticed is that the amount of money that I think I need to be happy keeps getting bigger.
Okay.
So, you know, a few years ago, a minimum wage job, I would have been happy because I had all the other good things.
Right.
And then as soon as I achieved a certain sum, I thought, well, I needed a greater sum. And I've noticed that happening for over a decade. And as soon as I reached the new sum of annual income, my sum just gets higher that I think I need for the next year.
Right.
And I'm aware of this, and I don't really like it. Because it also means that I'm willing to sacrifice more of the fun stuff and the cool stuff, like the stuff that really matters.
Yeah.
I'm willing to sacrifice some of that in order just to make more money.
So what is driving that then? And you must be getting something from that, but you know, you're not just hoarding it somewhere. You're gaining some things from that more money. So what, do you want to own a property? You know, sort of, is that the motivation? Or?
No, it's just psychological security. And that's where I think that... it probably doesn't really have an end point.
Right.
I don't really think because I've heard that, you know, we've all heard this, a couple of popular studies that say that American happiness index peaks around 70,000 and then plateaus to 150,000 and then decreases.
Right, yes.
And that wealthy people don't think they have enough either. So I really think that they don't, they're still worried they're going to lose what they have.
Yes.
So the fear of losing, you know, when do we get enough that we aren't worried that we might lose it?
Mm.
And if we haven't invested in the stock market, we're worried about losing it there.
Yeah.
If we haven't invested in real estate, we're worried about losing it there.
Yeah.
So there's no real safe way to store money, it turns out.
Right.
Entirely safe.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Personally, I like the idea of being really happy and fulfilled with a annual income of around $60,000.
Right.
But I really doubt that will work for me for long. I will probably want more and more and more, like everybody else I know.
Is that linked somewhat though to independence, though, rather than you want a new Tesla or something, is it? Or is it linked to, I think I do actually quite want new Tesla?
I think it's just a number. It's just a number in the head.
Okay.
Because I could live just fine on $30,000 a year, wonderfully.
No, really?
Living great, you know, but no, it's just a number, and the number, as soon as you achieve that number, it's another number.
Right.
I think it's a real practice and act of will to be genuine, to keep good with the goal that you set and be like, okay, I've achieved that. Now I'm only going to concentrate on the important things in life, like doing good for others and having fun and spending time with friends and family.
Yeah.
Just concentrate on that stuff, but you almost need someone else to keep reminding you, I think. Hey, you've achieved your goal. Now just live this life, the one you're talking about living, and don't try and get more money. Yeah.
Right. And the problem is we're not reminded that very much by the culture surrounding us in America, are we? I mean, with advertising and all the rest of it. In fact, we're reminded of just the opposite. So
just the opposite.
Yeah. In an article for the New York Times, Ron Lieber ponders on consumerism and how the external pressure there is from advertising and peers. So I'm wondering, how much of an influence do you think the beliefs or behaviors of those around us have on our feelings about wealth and how much we want to acquire it? Do you think, you know, he suggests doing a materialism audit before you move somewhere, especially with kids, to see what are the prevailing attitudes in that community about wealth and money, you know, and the meaning of life.
I think that's probably really key. And living in this area in Santa Cruz, you know, it, like you pointed out, it is really expensive. And yeah, this is not a good place to live and be happy living with a very basic income level.
Yeah.
Almost everybody I know wants to make a little more money than they make.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge factor.
Yes.
Well, I've traveled in other places, other parts of the world, where upward mobility isn't as much of an option, and it's really refreshing because no one's really trying to get rich. They know they can't. They're not capable of it with their capital and their position in society, so they just enjoy what they have. A little fruit stand, a small market.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that's part of the argument of providing people with a basic standard of living, and then, you know, so that everybody has that kind of basic standard, and then it's down to the individual. If you want to strive for more, then you can, you know, if you do want all those extras that you've talked about. But of course, that isn't really how it works here. In their book, How Much Is Enough? Money and the Good Life, the Skidelskys make a call for moral economics, asking what constitutes the good life. And they believe that capitalism was founded on a Faustian pact, that in the past, usury and greed were considered sins. However, it was agreed that for a time, these sins could be overlooked in order to release the productive powers of capitalism on the understanding that once having lifted humanity out of poverty, the evils would be banished. However, capitalism rests on the endless expansion of wants. Thus, inevitably, greed has become good, and it's given us wealth beyond measure, but it's taken away the chief benefit of wealth, the consciousness of having enough. So they're saying capitalism has overturned the meaning of greed, that it's now good. And I'm wondering how true this rings for you, whether you feel that acquiring material goods has become an end in itself.
Wow, that is profound. That is profound. I did not know that capitalism had its origins, or at least people argued, the Faustians argued that capitalism...
Well, they're putting this forward, yes, that the original concept of capitalism was to create an engine that would bring everybody out of poverty.
Wow.
But that, you know, using techniques that in the past were frowned upon, like usury and greed, you know, morally right. Those things used to be frowned upon, whereas now... You know, just somebody who wants to, works really hard and earns more and more and more, we wouldn't even consider them as greedy. You know,
no,
we think well, they're just working hard,
they're
you
just
know.
Motivated, driven people.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's always okay if you miss an engagement with family or friends, it's okay as long as it was really important, which means it had something to do with work.
Yeah. But I think what they're saying is that the whole point of it all originally was to feel that you had enough, to feel secure and independent, you know, be your own person, you know.
That really backfired on us.
Yes.
That really backfired on us, yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, it is absolutely an end in and of itself at this point. The acquisition of wealth, even if you never do anything with it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Most people don't. It appears most people with money do use their wealth less and less. There's less for them to spend it on.
Yeah, that is true.
They have,
Well, beyond a certain point,
beyond a certain point, what do you mean?
You can't spend it, or if you are spending it, it's on a few things. So the wealth is not getting distributed amongst a lot of businesses. You know, you might buy a Learjet or something like that, you know, so you're not benefiting a lot of people. That was one thing. John Maynard Keynes believed that there would come a time where we would be working 10 or 15 hours a week, because the way it was looking sort of in the 30s and the way it progressed through the 50s, it looked like we would just all have so much leisure we wouldn't know what to do with it. But instead of that, it seems some people are working a lot more and other people just don't have any work. You know, it didn't work out like that, unfortunately. So would you, I don't know how this could be done, but would you be willing to work less to have more leisure time to enable there to be more work to spread around? Like I say, I don't know how we would achieve that, but is that a concept that you could get your head around?
I believe that the hunter-gatherers were the original leisure class, working 2 to 4 hours a day, and that we always had the idea that with agriculture we would have free up more free time.
Yeah.
And it did work to a degree.
Yeah.
We were able to develop the arts and more complicated politics. But yeah, we've just gotten busier and busier. I would be, as long as someone would slap me in the face once in a while and say, you're doing this because this is more important than just making material gains.
Yes.
I would absolutely love to work 10 to 15 hours a week. I would love it.
Yeah.
And it does make sense. We have the food. We have...
Yeah.
There's just no need for everyone to work quite this hard. It doesn't make sense.
No.
Yeah, we work harder than we did when we were all growing our own food, probably.
Yeah.
Or at least the percentage of the population does, while a percentage doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
Yeah.
And I would still have a living wage. My basic needs would be taken care of, maybe even a little bit of savings, and I could just work less. Oh, please, sign me up. Sign me up. But I would have to do that with the knowledge that not everyone around me, with the knowledge that everyone around me was doing the same thing.
Yes.
Because if I was suddenly sinking below the standard of living everybody else was at, then I would be,
And therein lies the problem, you know, and I think it does need a sort of change in attitude of a large portion of the people. And it doesn't mean going to socialism or communism or whatever. I mean, I think everybody is different. So a really good friend of mine, she used to say, you know, give someone a penny, one will save it, one will lose it, one will gamble it, one will give it away, one will hoard it. You know, everybody's different and you're never going to make everyone the same. No. And everyone should have the opportunity to grow and develop their lives with the potential that they have, you know. So I don't think it's a question of communism, of trying to make sure everybody's equal, but at the same time, some sense of us all having a sense of community so that there isn't a huge divide between the, how money's distributed. And like I say, I'm not saying I've got the answer to that, but I think beginning to think how much is enough is one way to begin that.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Because a lot of us have achieved enough.
Yeah.
We if we could just say, this is enough, then we could, we would not have this feeling that we're constantly needing to work a little harder, make a little more, which is, it's absurd.
Yeah.
You know, we're eating fine, we have a little bit of money saved up, hopefully, that over time will constitute some form of retirement. And we have a house over, you know, a roof over our heads. I mean, what more?
Yeah.
The real stuff is not just making that figure bigger. I think it's a fundamental part of the human condition, which is we constantly postpone our fulfillment for some future date.
Right, yes.
And I think money is one of the easiest ones to do that with.
Else is always greener.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. As soon as I get that extra $20,000 a year, then I'm really going to spend time with my friends, and I'm really going to take more nature walks. And go camping with my children. Yeah, all that. It's so sad. We're such fallible creatures.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your opinions. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And thank you so much again to everybody who took part in the On the Street conversations this week. I hope it's given you some food for thought. Maybe you can think about what represents quality of life for you. What is the good life for you? And to what degree do you equate happiness with money? What other things do you need in your life as well? And I think it's kind of a fun speculation, because I think, you know, a lot of us have that little fun speculation of what would I do if I won the lottery, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, and we sort of think, oh, I might do this and I would get this person that. But, you know, it's quite an interesting speculation to think, how much is enough? You know, what do I actually need in my life to make me happy? And it's probably different for every one of us, you know, but it's interesting to know what that point is. And we may or may not get to that point. We may exceed it. But if we actually delve into what is enough for us and what actually constitutes enough, how connected is that to materialism and how connected is it to other things, it might help us to live a more contented life. So some things to think about for this week. Thank you for listening, and look forward to you joining me again for the next Arts Hour.